Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Alarmist. Hey, Alarmy. Check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
Like, what is that instinct that made you run to the bathroom?
Shame. Oh, 100%. I felt so ashamed. This is like, she was like an older woman too.
Right.
And she had this like,
you were disgracing her.
She was disgraced. Like, make no mistake. If she came in with grace, she was disgraced.
Yes.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode. Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Gina Collada. Gina is a New York Times health journalist and author of Flu, the story of the great influenza pandemic of 1918 and the search for the virus that caused it. Let's hear what she has to say about the 1918 pandemic. Hi Gina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, before we dive in and start talking about the flu, I think it's important for our listeners to get some context behind it. What's going on in the world in 1918?
Well, it was a really difficult time because there was a world war going on. And also in 1918, no one knew what a virus was. So if the flu comes around, you know, no one knows what causes it. So it was a time when science was very different than it is today. And when there were a lot of troop movements and disruptions because of the war.
I'd love to set the record straight. Why is the 1918 pandemic called the Spanish flu? And is that inappropriate?
It really is. The reason is that during the war, there was a lot of censorship. And in Spain, they had reports of this strange flu arising in Spain. But that's only because there wasn't a those reports were not censored. So actually, that's a real misnomer. It was everywhere. And it wasn't Spanish. It was like, you know, with COVID, it wasn't, you know, you call it what did Trump call it? The China flu or the China.
Yeah, yeah.
China virus. This was not a virus that originated in Spain, like COVID, which originated in China. This was a virus that is not clear where it originated.
Do we know where are some pockets, or do people have an idea of where it could have started? I've read there's some conflicting reports.
The hypothesis is most of the big flu pandemics, I hate to say it, started in China. And they usually started in China because a bird had a flu and it mutated and infected something like a pig. And then the pig flu infected something like a person. So it usually goes from bird to mammal to human being. So it probably originated the way all the others originated. And the genetics indicate that's probably what happened to it. So it did not originate in Spain. It almost certainly originated in China or maybe somewhere nearby. And it almost certainly originated from a bird.
And how did the virus spread? What was what were some of the known ways that it was contagious?
Well, because just like any other flu, it was spreading through the air, through droplets. And there was a lot, one thing that really helped it spread, I mean, you didn't have the kind of travel we had today, but they had all those troop movements. And it also spread sort of very weird ways, like it would sort of pop up in strange places. It'd be in one city, and then all of a sudden it'd be in another city. And usually it was a very, very contagious flu. So if somebody traveled, like they would have in Alaska, somebody was visiting this very remote village, a mailman, and somehow managed to spread it to the village where it killed almost everybody in the village. So it was one of those things where, because they didn't have the kind of science they have today, it's harder than it could be to trace it. But you could see reports of these deaths popping up all over the place, and it was all over the world. There wasn't any place that was spared.
How big of a part did World War I play in this spread?
It's thought that it played a really big role because you had people traveling to different countries all over the place. I mean, people were coming and going from Europe and from Asia, from everywhere. And when you have something as contagious as this flu, it can start seeding the flu virus all over the world.
So what were some of the flu's symptoms? How did the virus attack the human body?
It attacked the human body really attacked the lungs, and people would get a very rapid, fast lung infection, making it really difficult to breathe. And for a lot of people, bacteria would also come in. So it got confusing because they had a bacterial pneumonia on top of a viral disease. But most people died because they couldn't breathe and their lungs were filling with fluid. It was really sort of a gruesome death, and it could happen very quickly. And it was unusual because it killed so many people, and it killed people who were much younger than the usual flu victims. It was killing people in middle age instead of usually it's very old and the very young.
Do we know why people in that age group were the most susceptible to the virus?
Well, actually, the very old and very young also were susceptible.
Oh, okay.
It describes it as a W-shaped curve. The very young, and then the middle-aged, and then, or maybe young adults, I would call them, and then the very old. The hypothesis is that there may have been something that spread through the world previously, and these people who were young adults were not exposed to it. One hypothesis is there was a Russian flu, they called it, that happened in the late 1800s. And it may have been that a lot of people who were exposed to that flu had some protection from this 1918 flu. But the whole thing is kind of a mystery. It really was a strange flu because the age distribution was so unusual.
How did the doctors at the time treat the flu?
It was really strange. They had all kinds of odd concoctions. Since they didn't know what a virus was, they didn't have any way of treating it. They had things people would think were really kind of strange. They started doing vaccines with weird bacteria mixtures. They didn't know what it was. There was this hypothesis it was this particular kind of bacteria, which of course it wasn't. So they didn't really know how to treat it. They did have, though, social distancing. And they did have masks, and they told people to stay away, and they closed schools, and they closed the courts, and they banned public gatherings. So it was clear it was spreading through crowds, and there were attempts to try to keep people away from these crowds.
Now, from my understanding, the flu came in three waves over the course of 2 years. Did infection rates vary during these three waves? Was there one that was more deadly? Do they know why?
You know, it's really hard. They don't have great statistics. That's also part of the problem. Because how do you know somebody died of the flu and not something else? You really kind of don't. Somebody's dead. And how careful were they in recording these deaths? So the statistics were kind of, you can look at obituaries, you can look at how many people died, but it's really hard to know for sure, like, was one wave more deadly than the other? I mean, it was a whole different world then. Medicine was so different. Public health was so different. It was just hard to compare it to what we have today.
And can you help us understand how deadly it was, I guess?
It was deadly, like more deadly than COVID. It really was. And maybe that's because they didn't have a way of treating it. Like right now we have ventilators, we can keep people alive. They really didn't have anything like that. So if you got infected, you were infected most people didn't die. Most people lived. But because so many people were infected, if you just have a higher than normal death rate, you end up with a lot of deaths. So how did they treat it? They treated it, you know, they would basically try any sort of weird thing that they could, or they would just tell you to stay away from everyone else, which is probably good advice. And they really didn't have anything. Now, we don't have much either for the flu. We have vaccines, which really are effective, not, you know, depending on the year, but they can really help. And then we have things like Tamiflu, these antivirals, but we don't have anything that's like an antibiotic, like a wipeout drug for flu either. We're not that great. We're a lot better than 1918, but we don't have the cure for everybody.
Now, how did living conditions at the time affect the spread and the recovery from the flu?
Well, there wasn't very good hygiene. I mean, there was, not like we have today.
Right.
And a lot of people in cities in particular lived in very close quarters. So that really helped spread the flu as well. But really, it was just that the virus was so infectious. I mean, it went everywhere in the world. It went places where people were in cities. It went to remote areas. It went to the most remote areas ever. So it wasn't necessarily just that people were living close together in cities, because the virus was in rural areas as well.
And at what point did the U.S. government realize that they were dealing with a serious health crisis? And once they knew, how did they respond?
They knew very early, because there are these reports of incredible numbers of deaths of young soldiers in various camps. And they sent out a contingent to Fort Devens in Boston at the very beginning of the pandemic. And they sent some of the most famous doctors to say, you know, what do we see here? And they wrote back a report that was horrifying. They said, I just hope I just have these memories and I wish I didn't have to have them. They're so awful. And we saw these young men filing into the infirmary, and then in the morning, their bodies were stacked like cordwood. I mean, it was a horrifying scene. So that was very scary. And the government knew that something was going on. They didn't really know what the flu was, because like I said, they didn't know what a virus was. They didn't have any way of isolating it or knowing how to characterize it. But they knew this was a really, really terrible epidemic, and nothing they'd ever seen before.
Was there a turning point in the pandemic where they realized they really needed to come together? You know, it was happening all over the world, and they need to do some kind of joint global response?
There wasn't a global response, but it locally, cities pretty much closed down. The courts closed down. The schools closed down. Everything was shut down. It was just sort of silence, because nobody wanted to go out in public. They had no public gatherings. Everything was banned. And when you did go out, you had to wear a mask, just like COVID.
Well, we read that there were groups that were actually very... against the mask mandates.
Oh, there were. Yeah, of course. Yeah. There are the anti-mask groups. That sounds familiar too, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it wasn't clear how much these masks were really helping. I mean, I'm not sure how great they were. And there were reports that masks really don't help that much against flu. So, and even today. So it's not clear that they were the greatest thing, but they were trying. I mean, I had a picture in my book of this baseball game, and everybody in it was, all the pitcher, the batter, everybody was wearing a mask. And there are these pictures also of people like police wearing masks. So there were a lot of places where people were wearing them, but you were right. There was an anti-mask movement. People said this, they're not going to do it.
They also shamed the, there was a lot of shame happening. Yeah,
there was.
There
was. Yeah, that's right. It was so similar to COVID. I mean, I never thought I'd live through something so similar again with the mask, the anti-mask, the social distancing, the isolation, the closing of the schools. It was kind of incredible to see COVID sort of repeating what happened in 1918.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Now, you wrote your book in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
How was your experience? Did you ever think that you would actually experience something like what you had written about? It must have been wild.
No, it was really strange. It was real. And I actually didn't even believe it at first. I said, no, this can't be. It's just too incredible. And I was just sort of so stunned that we would have this new virus come around. But things were so different. I mean, who could you believe we got a vaccine in 1 year? It was unbelievable.
Yeah, very incredible.
And the 1918 flu, they never did have a vaccine. So it made a big difference for us. But what a shock, you know, everything closing down like that. I mean, New Jersey, where I live, the governor closed the public park. So we had like a trail along the canal. There's nobody there. You can't go because it's closed. All these barriers because of COVID. And I said, well, wait a minute, there's nobody there. I mean, who are we protecting? And
Wow.
I would go for a run, and people would see me on the sidewalk, and they'd jump away. And I thought, wait a minute, excuse me, I'm just running by in the outdoors.
Now, we read that President Woodrow Wilson contracted the flu during the World War I peace talks. How did this virus and him contracting the virus affect the outcome of the Paris Peace Conference and the end of the war?
I don't really think it did, but maybe I'm wrong, Rebecca. You probably know more than I did. Well, one of the strange things about this flu is that when it was over, it was almost as though it was forgotten, and people never talked about it. It was like something in the past, part of the horrors of war, and let's just get over it and go on with our lives. And one that it's thought that one reason that that happened is that there were no famous figures, no presidents, nobody that was killed by this flu. A lot of anonymous people that you never heard of were killed. And it was if there had been, like, you know, if President Wilson had died, then it would have made a big difference. But no, he, like most people who got it, got better. So it was, you know, it was strange in the fact that, you know, you could forget about it because it didn't really impact history the way you would have expected something to. On the other hand, you could also say the same thing about COVID, because, you know, many people say it's over. COVID's done. I don't want to focus on it the rest of my life. And I actually wrote a story once about how the pandemics end, and they end when people get tired of them.
Wow.
Which is kind of interesting. You know, it's not like COVID is gone. It's just people are tired of COVID. And the flu sort of lingered on. I mean, it mutated, so it wasn't as deadly, but we still have the flu. And people just don't want to obsess over the flu all the time. Many people don't want to obsess over COVID all the time. So it's kind of interesting, because here we, before COVID, I wrote this thing, or maybe it was during COVID, how the pandemics end. And I didn't think I'd see it in real life. It ends when people are tired of it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah. What do you think we learned from the 1918 flu pandemic? How did it shape our response? How did then that shape our response to COVID and what we went through?
Well, I'm not sure it made that much of a difference, because people don't want to prepare in advance for anything until it happens. And it's actually hard. Who would ever have known that COVID would be our pandemic? But one thing it did do was, is like 1970s, there was this fear of a swine flu. And that really got people scared of actually of flu vaccinations, because there were some young soldiers that died of a flu that seemed to be coming from a pig. And the 1918 flu seemed to have jumped from a pig to a human. So there was this fear that, oh my gosh, 1918 is coming back again, and we're going to quickly make a swine flu vaccine. So they made a swine flu vaccine, and President Ford told everybody they had to get this vaccine. You know, this horrible pandemic is coming. And then some people got the vaccine, and almost certainly was a total coincidence, they died, some older people. And they said, oh no, the vaccine is killing people. And then some people got the vaccine and they got Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a strange neurological disease. It's entirely unclear whether that was a coincidence or not. But ever since then, people have been worried about flu shots, and flu shots have to have a warning on them saying you might get Guillain-Barré. So that actually turned people off about flu shots. They said, you know, this is, you, who knows, they're not safe, they don't do anything for you. I'm not so worried about the flu. I'd got the flu shot and then I got the flu. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But the swine flu thing really was, it was directly related to 1918, and it made things worse.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting.
Now, there's no way to actually answer this or predict this, but I'm curious, what are the odds that we will live through another pandemic anytime soon? I mean,
I don't know. It's been a long time since 1918. Let's hope it's another 100 years. I don't know. It'd be really nice if that happened. And also, you know, I also like to think, because science does get better and better and better, that the next time things would be better than this time. I mean, this time, I think getting a vaccine in 1 year was shocking. It was so fast, but may do even better next time. Not only have a vaccine in 1 year, but have a cure if you get it in 1 year.
It's interesting because now we're saying, oh, it was only 1 year, right? But when it was happening,
it felt
like for a lifetime.
I know. And then you had, and then it was so hard to get it when it came out. Like I had to drive an hour to get it. It was unbelievable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So we always ask our guest experts this one question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the 1918 flu pandemic, who or what would that be?
I guess I would say hubris, feeling that, you know, we're okay now, nothing's going to happen to us. And I think that was part of it. I think there was a lot of denial that this could actually be going on at the very beginning. And then it became clear that something was happening.
Well, Gina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
We're going to head over now to Patreon and discuss further.
Okay, sounds good.
If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. And stay tuned because next week we'll be discussing the film My Best Friend's Wedding. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
It's okay if you aren't ready for kids right now. It's okay if you don't want to be a mom now or even ever. It's nobody's decision but yours. But do you know what's not okay? Not knowing how effective your birth control is. Talk to your doctor about effective birth control options so you can make an informed decision. Tap to learn more.